We are the Democratic Party, a party that is, shall we say, not lockstep.
Oh, really? You don't say, Madam Speaker Emerita?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX. Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR. And Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. Not that it needs a blanket. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around confused swell fellow from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another all-too-thrilling edition of the Bradcast.
Yeah, I could do with a little less thrilling.
Less thrills. I could use less thrills as well. Hi, Desi Doyen. How are you?
Doing all right.
All right. Well, that's because we haven't had the rest of the show yet. I'll ask you in an hour or so. Anyway, welcome to the Bradcast. As you likely know, I don't tend to cover polling all that much here on the show, in large part because it's not necessarily predictive of what actually will happen on Election Day. But sometimes there is something that may be gleaned from certain polls. I do not know if this poll, out exclusively from Politico today, is one of those polls or not. But before we get to our two of our favorite guests, actually, shortly, to try to help us make some sense of the entire world in less than an hour's time, let me hit some interesting points from this interesting poll. A top Democratic pollster has a new survey showing President Joe Biden still in contention against Donald Trump, but at further risk of losing the election, with other leading Democrats now surging ahead. The national poll, conducted and commissioned by the firm Ben Dixon and Amandi after Biden's politically disastrous debate and shared exclusively with Politico, found Biden trailing Trump 42% to 43%. So not terrible, one point behind nationally. But, of course, this is from a Democratic firm, one that reportedly advised former President Barack Obama in his two presidential campaigns and conducted this this new survey. So take that for what it's worth. And more importantly, we don't run national elections here. And, you know, his numbers, Biden's numbers, would likely need to be much higher than Donald Trump's nationally on Election Day in order to win the election. So please see these numbers on Biden and Trump, with the president trailing nationally by 1 point, or just 1 point, depending on how you look at it, as more of a yardstick for a broader picture, than anything else. And most important, by way of comparison to some of the other numbers reported in this very same survey. In particular, while Biden trails Trump nationally by 1 point in this survey, it also finds that Vice President Kamala Harris is now running 1 point ahead of Donald Trump. 42% to 41%. That's interesting. Again, not huge numbers or, you know, even a huge difference from what Biden is doing. Still sort of in the margin of error.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like it's still within that margin of error. So it's fluid.
Yes, but it might offer some comfort to those Democrats who are worried about what would happen if, and it still remains a very big if for a whole bunch of reasons that we'll discuss as the hour goes on. If Kamala Harris were to take over at the top of a Democratic presidential ticket. While many had argued in the past, and certainly in the past 2 weeks since the disastrous debate for Joe Biden, that Kamala Harris was even more unpopular than Joe Biden, well, these numbers from a reputable, if friendly, Democratic pollster would seem to make a very different case about Harris's prospects. Now, for what it's worth, the same poll also tested other potential Democratic tickets, finding one, just one other Democratic name for the moment who is also running ahead of Trump in a head-to-head match, even though I do not believe anyone has considered that she should take Biden's place, and that would be former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She's beating Trump by 2 points in this poll, 43 to 41, doing even better than Kamala Harris or Joe Biden, who is trailing Trump. So, you know, again, take that for what it's worth, which may or may not be much. With Clinton at the top of the ticket and Harris staying on as her vice presidential nominee, a Clinton, these are the numbers.
Okay.
A Clinton-Harris ticket currently has a 3-point lead, 43 to 40. Over Trump, and it actually does 4 points better than a Biden-Harris ticket in this particular poll, Desi.
It is interesting that they decided to ask that question as opposed to so many others.
Well, there were others that they asked poll, and I'm not making the case certainly for Hillary Clinton or even for Kamala Harris here at the top of the ticket with these numbers. I'm just sharing them with you. And in particular, for the many that I've heard from who seem to believe that only Joe Biden could possibly win at this point, at this late date, or that Harris would have no chance if she took over the lead at the top of the ticket here. About 1 month before the Democratic National Convention and just about 90 days before the start of early voting in some states. Fernand Amandi, the veteran Miami-based pollster who runs Ben Dixon and Amanda, which conducted the new poll on Biden and these Democrats, pointed to the more than one-third of Democrats who do not view the president as fit to run and said that he shouldn't continue on in the contest, noting, quote, voters have significant concerns about President Biden's advanced age, and their concerns have only grown louder, but they are still not enough where it has made a race but those numbers are still not enough where it has made the race a blowout for Donald Trump, at least not yet. Amandi said that he was most taken aback by the Democrats who outperformed the others. The poll tested other leading Democrats who are positioned to run should Biden step down, though it found all of them trailing both Harris and Trump. And that would include California Governor Gavin Newsom, who's running behind Trump by 3 points. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, just a bit further behind the former president by 4 points. Though in both of those cases, it should be noted here, their national name recognition at this point is certainly lower than Biden or Harris or Trump's. And yes, of course, Hillary Clinton's. A Democratic ticket led by Harris as the presidential nominee with Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro as her running mate also fared well. They bested Trump by 2 percentage points, while a Harris-led ticket with Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan as her vice presidential nominee is 2 percentage points behind Trump. In what should be considered encouraging to Democrats of all stripes in general, a majority of those Americans surveyed in this poll, or 53%, said they viewed Trump becoming president as a grave danger to democracy. So that tells me that this November race is eminently winnable still. For Democrats, you've got 53% of Americans who view Donald Trump as a grave danger. But Democrats are going to have to coalesce, and fairly quickly, around who they want to run this November. There are other options, however, beyond Biden that can beat Trump. If they, or importantly he, Joe Biden, decides to go that route. At least if you have confidence in this one particular poll that does seem worth noting. Quote, the debate exposed there was damage done to both candidates, said Amandi, because one would have expected in the aftermath of what the president himself described as a disastrous debate for Trump to be opening up a significant lead. He says we are not seeing that, and the backstop for that is voters having legitimate concerns about what Trump winning the presidency would mean for the future of the country and the democracy. Amandi said his motivation for commissioning and conducting this poll were to understand where likely voters stood after the June 27 debate, whether they were willing to stick with Biden despite his noticeable struggles, and if not, who else might be a competitive alternative against Trump just 3 months before some states begin early voting. The debate has reset the race from the perspective of what it means if Biden continues on or if we go down an unprecedented and uncharted path of making a nominee switch because he decides to step aside, said Amandi. Quote, are there alternatives that would be competitive with Trump? The answer is there are two, he notes, Clinton and Harris, who have a small but significant lead. So it is curious that the polling has not really changed all that much between Donald Trump and Joe Biden since that disastrous debate 2 weeks ago, with one recent reputable poll even showing Joe Biden picking up a few points over Donald Trump in some of the critical battleground states. But the Biden-Harris ticket was not hoping to hold steady with their, you know, decision to challenge Trump to an early debate. They needed to help push Biden up ahead of Trump, who, for the moment, still has a lead over Joe Biden in most national and swing state polling. So what happens next? Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, to say the least, in recent days. On Monday, after Joe Biden sent a letter to congressional leaders insisting he planned to stay in the race, and as members returned from their Independence Day recess, the expected floodgates of those calling for him to step down from the ticket actually did not happen. That was on Monday. There was a, you know, largely muted support for the president after 9 House members have now called for him to step down and 1 U.S. senator so far. And in fact, there was a bit of a rally around the flag defense from some quarters earlier in the week, such as parts of the Congressional Black Caucus in support of Joe Biden. But caucus meetings among the entire Democratic caucus in the House and one among Senate Democrats on Tuesday have reportedly been contentious and lacking a consensus on how the party should move forward together. That sounds like the Democrats I know. On Wednesday, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who may still carry the most sway for the party on Capitol Hill in any event, she held back from a full-throated endorsement of President Biden staying in the 2024 race. During an appearance on MSNBC's Morning Joe, she said that it is up to him whether to run, but she warned the clock is ticking.
We are the Democratic Party, a party that is, not lockstep. It's up to the president to decide if he is going to run. We're all encouraging him to make that decision because time is running short. I think overwhelming support of the caucus, it's not for me to say, I'm not the head of the caucus anymore, but he's beloved, he is respected, and people want him to make that decision, not me.
He has said he has made the decision. He has said firmly this week he is going to run. Do you want him to run?
I want him to do whatever he decides to do. And that's the way it is. Whatever he decides, we go with. I think it's really important, and I would hope everyone would join in, to let him deal with this NATO conference. This is a very big deal. And I've said to everyone, let's just hold off. Whatever you're thinking, either tell somebody privately, but you don't have to put that out on the table until we see how we go this week.
Yeah, I would call that not a full-throated endorsement, more of a wait and see what the president decides to do, even if, yeah, on Monday, in that two-page letter, he made clear he is running. He has decided. Nonetheless, the New York Times, which has reportedly now published more than 200 articles and op-eds calling for Biden to drop out since the debate 2 weeks ago, reported that conversation this morning with this headline, quote, Pelosi suggests that Biden should reconsider decision to stay in the race.
She did not say that.
Clearly. So, I mean, if she said he should reconsider, I certainly didn't. Did I miss that part?
No, the Times, it wasn't there.
The Times subheadline on this story was Representative Nancy Pelosi, a longtime Biden ally and the former speaker, is the most senior member of his party who has so far suggested he consider dropping out. Are you okay, New York Times? After her Morning Joe comments, CBS News asked the House Speaker Emerita whether she thinks Biden is the best to defeat Trump. Pelosi reportedly said, quote, I think the president is great, and there are some misrepresentations of what I have said. I never said he should reconsider his decision. The decision is the president's. I don't know what happened. I don't know what's happened in the New York Times that they make up news. But if that's why you're here, it isn't true, she said. The Times subsequently corrected their headline from Pelosi suggests that Biden should reconsider decision to stay in the race to Pelosi suggests that Biden could reconsider decision to stay in the race. And the subhead, they changed from describing Pelosi as, quote, the most senior member of his party who has so far suggested he consider dropping out to the most senior member of his party so far to suggest his status at the top of the ticket is uncertain.
Wow, they're really, really trying to push that false narrative.
Well, they included no note to explain their corrections there. But, you know, with all of that in mind, I mean, it certainly seems like the New York Times is, well, we've seen this before from the New York Times, as I recall, back in 2016. Not sure what they're doing. Maybe my guests will have some idea. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back with two of, as I said, our favorite guests who, well, they will explain everything to us. And somehow they will make this terrifying roller coaster ride all make sense, as they always, always do. Right? The great Heather Digby Parton from Salon and Hullabaloo and Driftglass of the Pro Left podcast will both join us next right here on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. to the Roller Coaster of Love, otherwise known as the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for sticking with us. Joining us now, and frankly not a moment too soon, our old friends who we too often turn to when all hope is lost. Heather Digby Parton is the much-beloved longtime blogger known as Digby and proprietor of her long-running Hullabaloo blog and the award-winning regular contributor at Salon.com. Heather Digby Parton, welcome back to the Bradcast.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Hope you had a delightful holiday. And let's see. Oh, he is, like Heather, a liberal and progressive blogger, take your pick, for some two decades now, who continues to be right about all manner of things time and time again. Known best as Drift Class and even sometimes as just Bill. He's also the longtime co-host of the Professional Left podcast with his wife, Fran, a.k.a. Blue Gal, which they record every week, tropical storm remnants or not, from their home in what they lovingly describe as flyover country, Illinois. Oh, Drift Class, welcome back to the Bradcast, sir.
Well, glad to be back, and thank you for that introduction.
And actually, since I mentioned the remnants of the tropical storm, you guys doing okay? You getting slammed with the rain from what was Hurricane Beryl up there?
We got, in my neighborhood, we got slapped with the tail end of that. So we got a little bit of rain last night and a little more today. But it's good for the crops, as we say. It's
yes.
Darn good for the crops.
And
so
it's always good to get slapped by the tail end. All right, guys.
Absolutely.
There's a whole lot, frankly, I would much rather be talking with you guys about today. Before the Republican National Convention. And just 90 days out from when early voting is set to begin in some states on the most critical election in our lifetimes and perhaps in our nation's history. But, and I may think this phrase may actually be apt this time. Hey, guys, Dems are in disarray about the top of their ticket as they're set to face off against the greatest, certainly internal threat that American democracy has ever faced in Donald Trump, who polls tell us is leading President Biden, despite what I see as one of the most effective and progressive presidencies in our nation's history, as a crisis of confidence has understandably now set in among many Democrats following Biden's dreadful performance at the first presidential debate a couple of weeks ago now. I have not spoken to either of you about it since. So I'm not even sure where either of you are falling, and things have been, as I said, you know, changing over the past several days. So let me just get your general takes of where things are now and or where they should be now. You know, in this roller coaster news cycle, it seems to me, particularly over the past several days, concerning what, if anything, should happen at the top of the ticket at this late date. Let me start with you, Drifty.
Oh, me?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Here's my position.
See?
I will fight like hell for whoever is the top of the Democratic ticket come November. Period. If it's Joe Biden, fight like hell for Joe. Love Joe. If Joe can't do it or isn't up to it, if Kamala Harris, I'll fight for Kamala Harris. If it's J.B. Pritzker swinging in from Illinois to take over the convention, that's cool with me, because the convention will be in Chicago, as you know, and hey, maybe he'll just show up and take over the top of the ticket.
Oh, I see.
The threat from Donald Trump outweighs every other consideration. Joe Biden, I don't care that he stutters. I don't care that he has difficulty moving. Thus far, for the last 3.5 years, he has governed the country remarkably well, steered through many crises, and done right by me. And I think it's time that we buckle down and say, look, whoever the Democratic nominee is better than Trump. Period, full stop.
Well, very good. Very clear, very thoughtful. And now we'll go to Heather Digby Parton. Heather, your thoughts at this point, your top line thoughts.
Well, I mean, if you expect me to disagree with that, you're going to be disappointed, because I agree with it 100%. I will vote. I have said this before, and I wrote this months ago when all this age stuff was coming up. I will crawl over hot coals to vote for anyone but Donald Trump. So it never mattered to me much at all. who was at the top of the ticket, because I just, you know, the threat is so extreme that it's impossible to, you know, even contemplate another Donald Trump presidency. Having said that, you know, I'm living in this world and I'm watching what's happening. And when after the debate, I said, you know, I wrote in my column, I had to write a column the next day, which was not easy. But I said, or actually that night, you know, I filed it that night for the morning. I had, you know, I said, you know, it is possible. I said at the time, it's possible that this was just bad enough that Joe Biden is going to decide that he needs to step down. And if that's the case, my preference was that the Democrats do not go into a circular firing squad, do not get into the Democrats in disarray paradigm that they often do, and that everyone sort of coalesces very quickly around the vice president, that the idea of having an open convention with anybody flying in, or, you know, James Carville's idea of having Barack Obama and Bill Clinton choose eight possibilities and then have them do many debates all over the country and then go to the debate and they do six rounds of votes or whatever cockamamie scheme he's got going.
That's what Carville is calling for right
yes,
now?
Yes, oh, yes, brother. That's what he said okay. yesterday. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I'm just going, no. We don't know. We don't need to do that. Let's just keep our heads here. And this way I said, let's stay cool. I said, if there's ever been a time to keep calm and carry on, it's now. And of course, that did not happen. And so here we are. And every day it's Willie or Wonnie. You know, at this point, I'm you know, I'm hopeful. All I can say is that if Joe Biden is deciding to step down, and by the way, he's not going to say it ahead of time, everybody. If he doesn't, he's going to go out and say, I'm running, I'm in it to win it, and blah, 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 until the moment he doesn't. So everybody just calm down about that. That's not how politicians operate. They don't just, you know, give in ahead of time. So whatever. If he does decide to drop out, I think that I would really, really like him to do it on the night that Donald Trump is going to accept the nomination for his party. And just, you know, stab him as hard in the back on his way out as he can. Because you know that Donald Trump would do the same to him.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Good call. I like that. And much better call than your hope that Democrats don't end up in a circular firing squad.
Yeah, too late for that. I mean, I can see that so many of them are having so much fun having fantasy football right now with deciding, all the fun ways we can do this without actually, you know, acknowledging, say, reality of how that would actually play out.
Exactly.
Well, okay, how would that all play out if Joe Biden does decide, and, you know, and I've said from the beginning, and it was very funny. I wrote a piece about how he could potentially smoothly be replaced at the top of the ticket if Joe Biden decided he did not want to run. Of course, you know, nobody reads that part. They only read the idea that, oh, you want to run Joe Biden off the ticket. No, I don't. But if he, or if at least if I do, I haven't said that I do. The point being, it's all going to be up to him. If he decides he wants to drop out, and so far he's saying he's staying in, but if he decides he drops out, is there a way to smoothly transition to another candidate without the Democrats ending up in a circular firing squad, Bill Driftglass?
I would assume so. I would assume if the leader of your party, who will not just spontaneously get up in the morning and go, hey, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to walk out on stage and quit, because Digby's 100% right. That's not how politics works. It's you work behind the scenes, you line up all of the people that you want to endorse what you are about to do, and then you very smoothly hand off the title to your vice president, who we all voted for and who is very popular among Democratic voters. And you express full confidence in her ability, because that's why you chose her in the first place. Mm-hmm. And anyone wants to argue about that, fine. Fight over it in the convention and watch what happens when you try to knock out the Black female vice president from the ticket in favor of anyone else in public. That will never work. So she is the logical next candidate. My wife and I did a dance in our kitchen when Joe Biden, literally in our kitchen, which is very small and I'm very tall, so it was kind of uncomfortable. But when he chose her, because we told each other this means he wants to win. He knows what it takes to win, and putting her on the ticket was what was necessary to win. So I think that that's very doable. It will not stop these slings and arrows coming from outside the party. It will not stop hysterics from bedwetting and screaming and jumping up and down and proposing their ideal candidates. I mean, I've gone through the list of the number of people Bill Kristol thinks should be president, and I don't recognize half the names he's talking about. But, you know, and in 2016, he was big into David French. He thought David French would be a great third-party candidate.
Bill Kristol, so, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't listen to the people who are hysterics. I try to listen to the professionals, and I think this could be handled, you know, with all the caveats about Democratic behavior, fairly smoothly, and I think the candidate would be obvious.
Driftglass does. You say that Joe Biden, his selection of Kamala back in 2020, meant that he knew that he wanted to win. He knew how to win. Does he still know what it takes to win? And if he, you know, would he drop out if he determined that that is what it took to win?
I wish I knew his state of mind. I don't. I do know that he's done a very good job governing so far. I think he's you know, morning, noon, and night for the last, he's like 800, right? For the last 700 years, he's been a very savvy politician. He knows everybody, and he's respected by almost everyone. And I don't think he's far gone. I think it's a little difficult getting over the idea that you're going to have to turn over the car keys to someone else when you think you're still capable of doing it. But I think he's loves the country enough and is leader enough in his party to do what's best in the end. And I'm going to just trust that. Now, I might be wrong. I've been wrong many, many times before. But if I'm wrong, then I think I'm wrong for all the right reasons. And I'm willing to live with that.
Do you think he can win?
I think he can win. Yes, I do. I really do. I think he has to clean up a bunch of mess. I think that if he goes to war with the press, that will earn him some points. If he starts running against the New York Times and Donald Trump, if he gets some people out there talking vigorously every time they're asked a question about Joe Biden's age, they pop back with, what about the Epstein report? What about that? Why aren't you talking about that? Every time a reporter asks a Democratic question, you ask them about Project 2025. I think you can move the numbers, but I'm very interested in finding out which voters we are talking about, because I've heard reports, you know, all the polls say voters believe this and voters believe that, and voters, there are no voters. There are specific blocks of voters, and I want to know which ones are persuadable. And I want to know what their issues are, and I want to know how to push the issues I believe on the people who I think are wavering or are centrists and don't ever want to make up their minds about anything. But yeah, I still think he can win.
Heather, do you think he can win?
Sure, I think he can win. I mean, it was always, always going to be, you know, in my view, it was going to be trench warfare. That's just the way the country is structured right now. And in fact, I mean, you talked about the poll that you talked about in your intro. Mm-hmm. I looked at that very closely, too, and I found it very interesting. I also found it interesting, 538, you know, G. Elliott Morris, who runs 538 now that Nate Silver has gone off to Substack land. He had an analysis yesterday that I thought was really interesting, in which he now says that, you know, they've got their model says that Trump wins 52 times out of 100. Biden wins 48 times out of 100 right now. That's 4 months ahead. And he says, look, you know, this is very, very close. It remains close. It hasn't really changed substantially, and it hasn't changed substantially in the swing states. And what he says is that in their model, what they're taking into account is instability. And they're looking at instability versus fundamentals. They're looking at the fact that the fundamentals still favor Joe Biden, actually by 3 points, is what he put in there. Mm-hmm. And that so the way that they're putting that together,
but
now, you know,
but yet again, he has a and yet they say that Joe has a 48% chance of winning and Trump has a 52%
chance. That's right. When they run their models, they do that. And one of the things that comes up in all of this is how much Joe Biden is, you know, up against a media onslaught that is very, which creates more of this instability. And instability can go both ways, by the way. You know, I mean, we do have a very stable genius, as you may recall, yes, running on the other side. And, you know, who knows what very stable thing he's going to be doing over the next 4 months. So to me, I mean, I think, and I wrote a piece about this last week. It was this week, and it was, you know, jumping off the French elections, which, you know, had also polled miserably for the good guys, and it was a huge surprise and massive turnout when the second round actually came in on Sunday.
And the left, coalition on the left, which decided to stick together, defeated the far, far right Nazis who everyone had predicted were going to win.
Which is basically what Bill is saying, which, you know, the left coalesces and Biden can win, or whoever the Democrat can win.
Well, that's exactly right. And one of the things I just wanted to add on that is that I think that what we're talking about here, and sometimes, you know, the personalities in this get are so, you know, extremely important in our kind of celebrity culture. You've got the very stable genius, then you've got, you know, the old guy who, you know, totally whiffed during a debate, and it's all very exciting reality TV competition show. But in truth, what's really happening here is that we have two coalitions in this country that are going up against each other. And I'm just going to say right now that I'm going to put my faith in the coalition that I belong to, which wants to preserve democracy and does not want to see fascism take over in America, just like the French just did, just like the British just did, just like it's happening in weird places like Iran and Mexico and, you know, all over the world. That is what is happening. That's the fundamental argument that's taking place everywhere. And I just have to believe that you know, the good guys, the left, center left of America is still capable of doing that. I just have to believe that that's true.
Yeah, the anti-fascists of America, exactly. Whether they're on the left or the center, or even, you know, some on the right are opposed to fascism. Yeah, it's, you know, it was really interesting. I noticed after the debate that night, there were these, you know, they always have these focus groups on cable of undecided voters. And now they've taken to calling them double haters. They hate both Joe Biden and they hate Donald Trump. I did not notice that they hated Joe Biden. I noticed that they hated Donald Trump. I noticed that they were sad. And it was something that I hadn't seen before in previous debates. I'm wondering if you guys saw this as well. But they were kind of sad about what they saw from Joe Biden because they really did not want to vote for Donald Trump. And they were sad. They really wanted to find a way to vote against Donald Trump. None of them said, well, that's it. I'm voting for Donald Trump. You know, they want to vote against Donald Trump. They just want to vote, it seems, for someone that they can feel good about. And I think both of you, you know, have said that you think Joe can win. But I'm wondering who has a better chance of winning, Joe Biden or Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket, given that, you know, it does seem there's a bunch of people who still, you know, call themselves undecided in all of these polls. Who seem to be looking for someone to vote for that they're not afraid they're going to, you know, die in the next 10 minutes. Driftglass?
Well, first of all, I don't know why the Democrats don't nominate Johnny Unbeatable, because Johnny Unbeatable can't be beat. So it's so dumb of them not to do that, because he's sitting right there with the name Unbeatable. For goodness sakes, what's wrong with you people? So, and that has been, you know, hey, I'm a guy who voted for John Anderson in my first election.
Okay.
Because Jimmy Carter was not good enough and Reagan was crazy. And I didn't want to throw my vote away, but I really did. I wanted to retain my moral purity. So you can blame Reagan on me.
Okay.
I think if you look back at who the popular candidates were, and I just pulled up some CBS polls and whatnot, the biggest, most popular candidate overall going into the 2016 election early was Hillary Clinton. She was crazy popular. She was had an approval rating of 59% in 2009. She was great Secretary of State. She was, you know, Jane unbeatable. She was going to roll in there, and then they hit her with the media machine. Then the Fox News hate radio machine went to work on her, and suddenly it's neck and neck, and it's a matter of a couple of people in a couple of states. And that's just going to happen to whoever is running at the top of the ticket. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And so you have the plus of, you know, not running Johnny Unbeatable, but an actual human being, is, you know what's going to happen to Kamala Harris once she, if she's announced at the top of the ticket. You know exactly what's going to happen to her. Exactly what happened to Barack Obama. I've already seen her birth certificate floating around out there on Twitter.
Oh, yeah,
man.
And those undecided voters, well, I don't know. You know, she seemed very nice, but now. So it's not a matter of undecided. It's a matter of people looking for a rationalization to do what they're going to do anyway. And the people who are going to vote for the fascists are going to find a way to do it. And I don't know who undecided voters are. I don't know under what rock they've been living for their entire adult life. I'd love to have a conversation with them, but I don't think the thing about Joe Biden is, you know, like the USS Enterprise, he is battle tested, at least. He's been through this a couple of times. He's taken shots. He's a known quantity. So unless something catastrophic happens, in which case, as with FDR, Truman took over and the country didn't end. We have a process for doing that if something drastically bad happens to the president of the United States. But Joe Biden's a good campaigner and he's a good guy and he has a lot of people still pulling for him. So I, you know, it's the grass is always greener on the other candidates, unless, you know, they're willing to pull Johnny Unbeatable out of retirement.
Digby, you cited former CNN journalist Brian Stelter in the days after the debate, arguing that the election had been a referendum on Donald Trump, but that now it has become a referendum on Joe Biden, according to Stelter. Is that true? And if so, can that even be changed at this point with Joe Biden at the top of the ticket, as he has vowed to stay?
Yes, it can be changed, but they're going to fight it. And by them, they, I mean the political media. They've lost their minds.
They've completely lost their minds.
Yes, they have. And this is not the first time that's happened. I think those of us who've been around a while, and I think we all have been, who are here on this, in this little conversation, recall this happening before. It happened back in the 90s. And I'm sure you remember went on there. It happened.
I don't remember anything that happened before last Thursday or so.
Okay.
So no.
I'll just remind you then.
Yeah.
I will remind you.
Yeah.
This has happened before.
Okay.
I mean, the most recent example would be Butter emails and Hillary Clinton putting her picture on the front page of the New York Times, you know, reading the New York Times online on the airplane in the days before the election. And that has been shown to have been absolutely determinative in the loss in that close election. And in this case, there's something very strange going on between the New York Times and Joe Biden. And, you know, I don't know, you know, you can read all about it online. People are talking about this and it's very obvious that something's going on there. There's some bad blood that really is, you know, downright bizarre at this point. But it's not just the New York Times. It's also people like Brian Stelter, who when asked on Twitter at whether or not, you know, why they're not covering, you know, the immense gaffes of Donald Trump and the absolute, you know, I mean, he sounds downright demented on the stump every time he talks. And he's making no sense talking about batteries and sharks and windmills and all this crazy stuff. And they asked him, you know, so how do you explain that? He said, well, he said the base, the Donald Trump's base doesn't care, and neither do GOP elites. So it's not really newsworthy. Whereas the Democrats do care, and that makes it news. That is outrageous. And of course, he's not, you know, that's his rationalization. The truth is that they get into a feeding frenzy, and you can see it. This is like some kind of Lord of the Flies dynamic that goes on in the press. All you had to do was watch that press conference the other day where they were, you know, hammering Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, over this doctor visiting, the neurologist visiting the White House. It was absolutely astonishing. And this is, they get into it. You know, they're trying to one-up each other. They're looking for the scoop. And somebody on Chris Hayes' show, All In on MSNBC last night, writer for, former writer for Grist and Fox, and he's an environmental writer, but David Roberts was on with Jamelle Bouie, and he said something, and I think he was actually quoting Bouie when he said this, which I think is very much in play here. Donald Trump is very elusive. He's got Teflon. It seems like, you know, years ago we were talking about the fact that he was just convicted of 34 felony counts, and that the Supreme Court has given him full immunity, et cetera, et cetera. And then somehow he slithers out of it time and time again. And the press has now sort of realized that, oh, maybe we'll get Biden instead. It's almost, it's primitive. Yeah. And so they've shifted their focus onto him. Now we'll get somebody. You know, it's a desire for a scalp.
Yeah.
And that is very, very difficult. And if that's one thing that I think that is somewhat, you know, problematic for Biden in a way that it would be for anybody else, but this narrative is so set and we're so late in the game that I think it may be more problematic for him than maybe it would be for Harris, that, you know, the press is really, really, they smell blood in the water and they are going for it. I characterize them as, you know, hungry piranhas.
Mm-hmm.
And that is tough, you know,
yeah.
That is a tough thing to go up against. So it's the one thing that I feel that Biden is, he's really good. He's got that stacked against him in a way that's disturbing, to say the least. And it's all the media's fault.
I would argue that it's also, I agree that it's completely the media's fault, that aspect of it, that feeding frenzy, which is so really just, you know, disturbing to see. And I think what I found out of that is that, you know, Dems in disarray is the corporate media's safe place. They love that. That's their favorite thing to hit on. And that a convention, an open convention, and all that chaos, all of this chaos actually benefits the media. I mean, no outcome would materially benefit them more than having an open race and a contested convention, all the drama, all the ratings, all the clicks. I think they're really salivating for that.
For sure.
But Dems are in disarray.
They are.
It does have to be covered. It you know, there is clearly a split among congressional leaders what to do about it. Even Nancy Pelosi could not come out with a full-throated endorsement of Joe Biden at this time.
But they're also conflating two different things, and it's now sort of coalesced into one thing. First of all, can Biden campaign vigorously, which clearly he can't debate as well as he used to, versus can he do the job of presidenting, which he has done extremely well? And we're not getting that question answered.
And in contrast with Trump, who, he can campaign vigorously for his groups and have his rallies,
but he's
incoherent. Crazy stuff, but he was a terrible president, and we know that. I mean, you know, how many hundreds of thousands of people died on his watch while he was, you know, telling everybody to drink bleach. I mean, come on,
we're not,
you know,
hearing,
that's the difference.
Yeah, we're not hearing that difference between the Trump administration, which we all lived through, the Biden administration, which we're living through, the policies that they put in place, those success of those policies or failure, and then what they're going to do next as president.
I will say I was genuinely shocked by the response. We opened up the phones at the beginning of the week after coming back from the holidays, opened up the phones to listeners to sort of get a sense, take their temperature of where they were on all of this. And I was really surprised that most of our callers to this show were almost, not entirely, but almost uniformly in favor of Joe Biden staying in the race. And some of them were furiously so. They were really angry about all of this and the suggestion that he should step down, be overthrown, or whatever. Driftglass, is there a disconnect between the voters in, say, flyover country Illinois and congressional leaders and big ticket donors and TV pundits, et cetera, in D.C.?
Yeah, there definitely is. And it is always amusing every time they discover that there's a whole big country out there beyond the Hudson River. It's always a sense of wonder when the people out in the real world don't do as they're told. Now, this is weirdly enough, like the mirror opposite of what I called magic ruralism, which is a genre of fiction where you send people from the Washington Post and the New York Times out to diners in Ohio and Illinois to talk to people in the dark interior of the United States, the mysterious area, and find out, why did you vote for Donald Trump? And they find out, you know, kind of the hard way that, oh, we're a bunch of bigots and we're kind of dumb and we watch Fox News all the time. And that's not the Republican Party that they were told existed by David Brooks for 30 years. That came as a complete surprise. So they had no idea these voters were out there. We knew they were out there because those are our neighbors. This is sort of the flip side of that. They have no idea how many Democrats respect a fighter in the White House. And that's what we're seeing with Joe Biden. And they have no idea how much we respect him standing with unions, standing with LGBTQ communities, how much we respect him standing up for women's rights. Those are all like completely peripheral issues to, but yeah, but what about, is he's old, you know, you're aware that he's very old. And they don't get it through their heads because they live in a little ivory tower. And the reason you live in an ivory tower is because you don't want to deal with the rabble out here in the real world. And so, yeah, there's a whole bunch of sentiment out here that is a growing sense of anger that we don't mind reporting the news. Honestly, we mind 200 articles in the New York Times about Joe Biden's age versus 0.001% about Trump. We mind the fact that Brian Stelter, when confronted, as I recall, about, well, why isn't anyone calling for Trump to call down? So Trump to step out. We'll say, well, the New York Times did that. Yeah, in an article, I believe entitled "Why Joe Biden Should Step Down," right. In the 20th paragraph, there's a brief mention of, and Donald Trump's pretty bad too. So it's that kind of, you know, they are. I think, frankly, Brian wants to go back to work at the New York Times and CNN.
Yeah,
and so he's scrambling to give them what they want, and clearly, what they want is more blood in the water, just like Bigby said. So yeah. They don't understand us at all, and they never have.
And one of the things that's interesting is that, and this was a story for, I don't know, maybe 7 seconds or so after the presidential debate, but one wonders how to explain that Biden reportedly out-fundraised Donald Trump in the 24 hours right after the debate and saw a surge of volunteer signups. I mean, I really do wonder. And I guess we have to send the reporters at New York Times, I was going to say, out to the diner, but let's not do that. Send them somewhere to figure out, you know, it seems like there is a rally around the flag effect either happening or wanting to happen once there is some sort of clarity about what is going on, that there is enough people who just, you know, can't tolerate. If you know these polls, there is a big undecided number. I think a larger undecided number than normal, because I think a lot of people don't want to vote for Donald Trump, but they are unsure of Joe Biden. And once they become sure that he's going to be on the ticket and that your choices are going to be between these two guys, I think you could see a bit of a change there. But it's strange that story about Biden reportedly out fundraising Trump, unless it's not true, you know, has sort of disappeared almost as quickly as it was reported. We're coming up against the top of the hour here, so I got to get out. I did want to ask a quick thought experiment, and we'll run around for each of you here that I'm sure you'll enjoy. Digby, let me start with you. If Joe Biden was replaced on the ballot by George W. Bush, who would you vote for this November?
Oh my God, you're asking something that is so awful. But you know what? I'm just going to be totally honest. I would vote for George W. Bush. Now, I would do it, you know, absolutely, you know, have to go home and bleach my brain out after doing it. But, you know, I would do it simply because I really do think that Donald Trump is an existential threat. And it's not just him. It's these people he's got around him. We haven't talked about it, but this Project 2025 is a chilling, you know, I'm calling it MAGA Kampf. You know, it's just this manifesto of, you know, fascist takeover of the American government. And he can't distance himself from it because all the people that are writing it are part of his inner sanctum. So, George W. Bush, it would be horrible and I would be absolutely hate every minute of it. But I guess I'd hold my nose and do it. What else could you do?
Well, let's see. Driftglass, if Joe Biden was replaced on the ballot by Dick Cheney, how would you vote this November?
Well, I've heard it pitched that we should have a Liz Cheney Harris unity ticket. Uh-huh. So you're skirting right up there, next to the edge.
Yeah.
As long as you promise not to cut this into a little piece and saying Driftless wanted Dick Cheney to be president of the United States, New York Times
too.
Would. There, yeah. Brad.
Okay.
That's what
the deal.
You're right.
I would have I'd vote for Cheney. Absolutely, Dick Cheney. is lawful evil. Donald Trump is chaotic evil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I will take lawful evil because Dick Cheney, you know, paid his taxes. He crossed all the I's, he dotted all the, and you know, we'd be screwed either way. But I think, you know, you could recover from a Cheney presidency. Recovering from a Donald Trump presidency is nuts. And by the way, did you ever hear Dan Savage talk about voting over the course of his life?
No.
No, yeah. But you'll have to sum it up very quickly because we're coming up to the.
Well, he said he's a gay man and he voted. He said I voted for anti-gay rights people my entire life because that was the top of the ticket. There was nobody who represented me, but he went ahead and voted anyway because he got the best he could get out of what he got, and eventually it came to pass that he got the rights that he should have had all along. Cheney would be an awful, awful choice, a horrible choice. Trump is an order of magnitude worse.
Yes.
It's not really even an issue.
Which is one of the reasons why I wanted to ask those horrible questions. Sorry to both of you, I think it's important to underscore. Look, if Heather Digby Parton is willing to vote for George W. Bush over Donald Trump, and Driftglass is willing to vote for Dick Cheney over Donald Trump, I'm hoping that our listeners would pay attention to the stakes here and what they mean. And I was going to choose Dick Cheney too over Donald Trump, but you know what? Dick Cheney is too old. So I'm going to have to rethink.
Damn you, Brad. Damn.
You have to go with the fascist then.
Anyway, I got to get out. My thanks to George W. Bush supporter Heather Digby Parton. You can find her work at salon.com and digbysblog.net. You can also find her on Twitter at digby56. And of course, there's Dick Cheney supporter Driftglass. You can find his podcast every week, every day at proleftpod.com. You can also find his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com. And you can find him on the Twitters at Mr_Electrico. There we go. All right, guys. Thank you so very much. We'll be calling and bothering you soon, or to save us very soon, whichever the case may be, or both. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can always download our show anytime for free at bradblog.com. No paywall. That's a service made possible by those of you kind enough to hit a donate button or stop by bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, the site still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Thanks, guys. Good luck, world. You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.